Thank you, Jack, for those kind remarks. My name is John Flemiston, a very grateful alcoholic. Hi, everybody. You know, as Jack was talking there, thinking in terms of adversities, yes, I had quite a bit of adversity. John Barleycorn. And so when I found this program and come to know you as a friend, all of these adversities left. I had a way of life that I could to live free from alcohol and these adversities, which I come to realize now since this program of Alcoholics Anonymous being a way of life, these challenges, the pitfalls in the mountains, all I welcome them because it is something that I need in order to maintain my sobriety. And speaking in terms of friendship, this is great. You know, had it not been for you, I wouldn't have been here. Listening to the music, the soul music on this side, on my left and your right. What advice is you need trying to relate an experience and trying to listen to an experience. So I suggest to you, if you want to stop your ear up on this side and open the one on this side, you might hear something. But it is indeed a privilege to be here. It is a pleasure. Because had it not been for you, as I say, I wouldn't have been here. Going back at my early childhood, since these things come into my mind since being sober a few 24 hours, fears and frustrations and confusions as a result of a shy, timid, self-conscious individual not knowing what was wrong with him, afraid to face the wall. At the age of 16, I had my first experience with John Barleycorn, and this gave me something I thought then that is what all I needed to face life. Because it brought about a feeling from, I like to think in terms from the top of my head to the tip of my toes, it brought a change about me all over. Even to the point of thinking, it changed my way of thinking. And from that first drink until the last one, one never was enough. Because the first one always made me feel good and I wanted to feel better, and first thing you know, I was passed out. This thing kept on for 25 years. I won't attempt to go or to relate experiences of so many things that happened to me, all of the things that happened to me when I started off drinking. I mean from periodic. I didn't drink every day or every week. But when I would stop off for a few weeks, it would give me a good start when I got started and I didn't know how to stop. So this thing, this rat race, this squirrel cage that I got into, this merry-go-round that I got on, it kept going round and round, over and over, for a period of 25 years, and it got to a point where I had enough. So as I said, this first drink, started the ball rolling, and it really rolled and with great speed. Being a child of this nature, as I say, shy, timid, and self-conscious, I was afraid. I was full of fears. Even to the point I was so afraid of my daddy until I didn't know how to love him as a child to love his daddy. And I think these things that happened in my early childhood were partially responsible for me to become an alcoholic. Not that I blame him, I don't blame anyone. I only blame myself because alcoholism to me is there something self-inflicted. I brought it on me. I did it to me. It's not what someone else did to me that brought me to the point, to the stage of a life failure. Everything that happened to me is what John did to me. So when I found this program, and I had enough, I wanted out and I wanted off. You showed me how. For this I'm grateful. I'm sober today for the grace of God working through you people. Not what I have done, but what you have done for me. So I have to be aware of this daily, because it gives me a sense of determination, persistence to keep on, because you gave me something that I had never experienced or had before, and it's beautiful, it's great. So at this early age of 16, finding something that I thought would give me the courage to face life, it never was a time from the beginning until the end that it got better. It would level off at times, but when I would start back, as I said, it was always worse. From the age of 16 to the age of 20, I got married the first time. I'd sworn off. I'd promised my mother. I'd promised my wife, my first wife, after the first child was born. I said, I'm not going to let liquor ruin the life of this little girl. I didn't know then that I was an alcoholic. I wasn't aware of alcoholism as an illness or a disease or whatever you might want to call it. But I began to make promises at an early age. This first marriage that was coming up at the age of 20, close to 21, I started the drinking on a Friday night, and it was to get married on a Sunday. I was afraid then, because I wanted to get married, but I didn't know, I didn't have the stamina of what it takes to be a man or to be a daddy. So I made promises from the beginning. And this Friday night I started to drink in an area of Atlanta called Vine City, one of the ghettos. They had to look me up on Sunday morning, sober me up and hold me up to go through the marriage ceremonies. This thing took hold early. And so when the first child was born a year later, I began to make promises again. I'm going to be a good daddy for this child. But it was always this thing that I wasn't aware of. One little drink won't hurt. But one little drink is what did it. And so by the time of in 17 years of this first marriage, I had made the jails. I had lost good jobs. My wife had kicked me out I don't know how many times. I don't know how many times to the stockade. But I was still making promises. If you would just give me one more chance, I swear I'll never take another drink. And so this thing kept on and on. My first wife, she said, well, the best way to get rid of this problem is to get rid of you. And she got a divorce. You know, when I got into AA, I was very much confused. I had quite a few days of sobriety, and then I finally ran across a sponsor. So he comes with me. We run together most of the time, whether he's talking or whether I'm talking. And so in this confused state of mind that I was in before I got to AA, and since being in AA, at times I get a little confused. But he helped me quite a bit. He says, you know, says, don't let this little confusion worry you too much. Says, he told me the thing happened to him. He says, you know, I was bad to drink too one time. He says, there was three houses in this block where I live. And says, I never could get in the right house at night. Says, I was either going in the house to the left or the right. So this particular time, he says, I remember, says, I had my key in my right pocket when I started drinking and it stayed in there. Says, coming home thinking in terms, says, well, I haven't had too much. Still a little confused, though. So he walks up on the porch and he reached and gets his key and he says, yes, I'm at the right place, all right. There's old rocking chair on the porch. This is the right house. He sticks the key in the door and he turns. He says, yeah, this is right. It's working. He goes on in and he walks in his bedroom. He says, yes, yeah, I'm in the right place, all right. Says, there's my pants on the chair and my shoes under the bed. Yeah, he said, yes, yeah, there. And my old lady sees old Ed in bed and says, "There I am right beside her." But the confusing part is, who is this damn fool standing up here? So I felt quite a relief when he told me how everything was with him. And coming into AA, it was wonderful. Yes, and you know, during my drinking around Atlanta, I started out working in domestic work. So there wasn't any pretty package stores that he often referred to now and then. It wasn't any pretty liquor stores that we see. I had to start, I started my drinking from the bootleggers. And in domestic service, he'd have these chartered kegs, you know, in the basement. And the boss, he'd put some in the fridge there in the fruit jar. And he would mark it, and I didn't know he was marking it. And he had a state mark on the box in this corner that he'd put it in, and he could tell when it was going down, how fast it was. Of course, it stayed at the same level, but it wasn't the same effect. Every time I'd take a drink out, I'd put that much more water back in it. So he'd tell me, says, "John, says, if you're going to drink my liquor, says, don't put water in it. Says, it's better if it ain't but a half a jar in there." So I started out in domestic service, and I learned to cook in private homes. And as I went on, running from one job to another, I finally worked myself out of domestic work, and I started restaurant and hotel cooking. Along with the experience in cooking, I loved to cook. And I made a pretty good cook. I was considered as one of the best around the city of Atlanta. And along with that, I was one of the worst drunks in the city of Atlanta. So I began to run. I followed the East Coast on up in the New England states. Keep saying that when I get where I'm going, I'm going to start life anew. When I get back to Atlanta, I'm going to make my wife feel bad because she kicked me out. But whenever I'd get back to Atlanta, I was in the same shape or worse than I was when I left. But I kept running to Florida. You know, right through the city here of Macon, most of the places that I go now, I have some memories of experiences that I had. I left Atlanta on the last occasion of running away. I had married the second time. Most of you from Atlanta know my wife, Elizabeth. And, of course, I had said when I met her, I said, "Well, maybe if I get me another wife, I won't drink as much. I'll have companionship." Of course, we met over the bottle, and we married over the bottle, and we continued to drink. Of course, our mind was getting worse all the time. She could kind of halfway manage hers because she could lay in the bed the next morning and then go to work, and I'd start to work and never would get there. So this thing on my last trip, experience running away from Atlanta, as we were coming on down, I think the memory comes in different areas of where I used to hitchhike and thumb. Through Forest Park, where I work now, there's a 41 and 19 detour. I rode the car to the end of the line, and I started walking and hitchhiking. And I made it to Macon about night that night. That day, I made it in here about night. I didn't have any money. So I asked the police officers if they would lock me up or let me spend the night. I did this on many, many occasions. Jonesboro was one. Precise was one. And so they say, "We'll lock you up," says, "we'll let you out early in the morning without any case or anything." And they did. They let me out the next morning. And on the way down the road towards the road border, I got down at the river. I began to think then about how sorry, how useless and no good as I was. And I said, when I got to the Okmulga River down there, "I'm going to jump overboard." Then, at this particular time, it had begun to antagonize and hurt inside. I had stopped hitchhiking. I had stopped thumbing. I don't know, this man rolled up in this old Ford, and he picked me up. I have thought of that experience many, many times and almost find myself questioning why. How did this happen? But since I've been into AA, I can understand now why these things happened, because there was a power beyond man that was watching over me. As he did on many, many occasions, he took care of me when I wasn't able to take care of myself. And no one else cared, I thought. So I went on down, and I hitchhiked into Brunswick. Rode into Brunswick on the top of a junk truck, with a white pair of pants on, the white shirt and the white cap, and noticed about what color they were when I got there. I got a job cooking at the Cloister Hotel out on Sea Island Beach. I would always work good when I was sober, because I didn't have any money when I got in there, and some good friends in Brunswick, before I got over to Jekyll Island, It was getting close to dark, and I didn't want to be sitting in the park benches, and so the patrolman was passing down Gloucester Street, and I asked him, I says, could I spend the night in jail? Says, I have no place to stay. He says, well, we can't lock you up. You haven't done anything. We can't just put you in jail. I says, well, if I take this brick and throw it at that window, will you lock me up then? He said, that's all right. You need to do that. Says, I got a friend down the street. He sent me to a little hotel down on Gloucester Street, and I told the proprietor what he said, and he said, well, you can stay. In fact, I went to work the next day up at a cafe on Main Street there. A few days later, that job was out. The soldier had come back from service and got his job back, so I went out to the Cloister. I was recommended out there. You know, that area there back in 1931 when I began cooking and going into doing domestic work. These memories come back on this beach. I was working for a family from Atlanta. I had problems of drinking then. This was back in the early age. Of course, the boss then, she didn't know for about 2 or 3 weeks after I'd been there that I was drinking. She didn't realize I was drinking too much until I didn't get out to bed until 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning to start breakfast, and they'd been up since 7 going to the beach. So this thing progressed continuously. So that's about the only hotel that I can remember that I wasn't kicked out of. I was party cook there at night. And I began to get ashamed of myself for how I was acting and doing and working. And I told a lie, telling the bosses my wife was sick back home and I had to hurry up and go. So he paid me off and I caught the bus and got on the way before I got locked up down there, really locked up. Of course, I frequented jails quite often. On one occasion down in Polk County, Florida, I was working. It was recommended from a doctor friend of mine in Atlanta. I was recommended down there to her for the Season Hotel at the Chalet Suzanne. On this trip down there, I had sworn off the liquor because my oldest boy at that time was about 4 years old, and he had had a bad case of pneumonia. And I had made bargaining with God, if you will spare my child, I'll never take another drink of liquor. As many, many bargains that I made, which I didn't hold up, didn't keep up to. So, This promise that I made, I said, now, I ain't going to drink no more liquor, but I didn't tell him nothing about being wine. So I continued to drink that. On this occasion is why I was at the Chalet Suzanne in Lake Wales. I'd been off about 6 or 8 weeks then, off of hard liquor. And so ones had been staying in every week. And this help quarters there, and we'd go out, they'd go out at night, and especially on Friday and Saturday night. And I'd been staying in and reading. And so about the third weekend, I said, I think I'll run with you all. I did. And I got started drinking that good old moonshine liquor. I said it was made with sulfur water, is why I reacted as it did. Next morning, I woke up in the jail in Polk County, charged with automobile theft, and wasn't aware how I got there. Of course, I soon found out that the man's car was parked in the hotel parking lot, and I wanted a drink. And it was very convenient for me to use it to go get a drink, but on the way back, I ran into the roadblock. Of course, I stole the car, yes. I call myself using it to get for my convenience to get a drink. Well, this doctor that has sent me, recommended me down there. He was a friend, really a friend to me, because he'd always tell me, Mr. Johnson, when you're not drinking, you got a job, always come to work. He says, but when you're drinking, don't come. I had forgotten him as a friend. As Jack was relating what a friend was, it put me to thinking about you and many, many other friends that we have in this program. I heard the saying a long time ago that a friend was one who knows all about you and they love you just the same. Well, he was a friend to me. He knew all about me. He knew that I was an alcoholic, and he had told me on many occasions, said, John, you're an alcoholic, you can't drink, but he couldn't tell me how not to drink. So sitting in the jail down at Polk County, looking down behind the bench between the bars, there was a little passage of scripture in red print, and I could look from where I was sitting and read it in very fine print. Even my eyes was in bad shape. And this little writing says, created me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. It said something to me, and I began to do a little thinking inside, wondering how am I going to get out of this mess. Listening to the prisoners talk in reference to race and prison and how rough it was there. I had served two sentences on the public works, but they were in the kitchen at Big Rock Jail in Atlanta. I had never been out in the prison. And this brought about more fears and worries. But I kept thinking about this because I felt something then was in me that needed changing. In the courtroom the next day, wondering what's going to happen. I'd had no idea that the man back in Atlanta, my friend, knew I was in jail. But when they called my case, I saw a man from Atlanta that I knew very well, was a lawyer, and he was a lawyer of my boss's. He sent him down there to talk with the judge and to explain to him that I wasn't just willfully stealing the car, but using it for the convenience of getting a drink, that I was an alcoholic. And you know, he talked him out of sending me to prison. That should have told me something, but I didn't listen. 10 years later, I was in prison in Big Rock Jail, and our chaplain then, a state chaplain, from Bill Allison, he's passed on, God rest his soul. And I asked him while in jail, I said, what portion of the Bible is this little verse written? And he told me the 51st book of Psalms. Of course, I was searching for something then, and I didn't know what it was. In the back of my mind, this spirit was trying to tell me something. And so I got the 51st book of Psalms and began to read. And the first portion of that says, have mercy on me, O God, according to thy loving kindness. According to the multitude of thy tender mercies, blot out of my transgressions. I won't go through all of it, but this deals with the inner self of getting self cleaned out. But I finished that sentence in jail. I didn't live 2 miles from the jail, and I was drunk when I got home, when I was released. this should have told me something, but I didn't listen. In 1941, my younger brother came back to New York, making restitution with the state, trying to clear himself of a sentence that he'd ran away from out of South Camp in Atlanta. He had the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. He showed me, he said, this is good. Says if you read it, says you're an alcoholic, says it'll help you. But I wasn't an alcoholic, so I said, this didn't touch me. I said, that's for a bunch of drunks. This is the first time AA was offered to me, and I refused it. 10 years later, 1951, I was in Connecticut. I was working for a family there after I had drank up a couple of good jobs in that area. And this woman told me I had left her home. I had run off and left my second wife, Elizabeth, then, which most of you know. I had gotten ashamed of how I treated these people. I had made promise. You know, when I go and apply for a new job, I was always working result work because I couldn't give local reference. They'd find out. Yes, I was a liar from the beginning. And so these people, she had given me a second chance. They said, John says, you're a good worker and a good cook. She said, you shouldn't let liquor ruin your life. So this morning, after I had been on a drunk the night before, I was ashamed of myself, and as I come downstairs, there's her place sitting in a dining room chair. Very convenient for me to go inside there, and three of these crisp $20 bills is what I needed to get back to Atlanta. I used it. I stole it. I used it. Now, these things that I say, I could say numbers and numbers of things in relation to my experience and how filthy and low down that I was. They're not too important, but I identify when I say I'm an alcoholic. I say these things with regrets. I can accept them because it's something that I can't change. You taught me this. So I came to Atlanta. And when they found out where I was, she wrote and told me, says, come back. No, she called and says, come on back. Says, I know the program can help you. I went back. Yes, I was always glad to make amends and apologies when I would mistreat people that way. And I went back, and she had told me about AA. First AA meeting I attended was on Whitney Avenue in New Haven, Connecticut. And the funny thing, I was going to AA for about 6 weeks, and I stayed sober. On through the Christmas holidays, I cooked with sherries, rums, brandies, and I didn't take a drink. I was going to AA. In January of 1952, I decided that I wasn't an alcoholic. There were reservations then as to whether I was or not. So I tried a half a pint. I fooled my wife, I thought, and I fooled the people. And I said, I'm not an alcoholic. Instead of going to AA, I went the next week and started to drinking again. And you know what happened. So we came on back to Atlanta. The people got tired of it. Their patience wore out. We came back to Atlanta. A few days later, I saw in the paper where there was a group being started in our community. And I told my wife, I said, no, I don't need that. Now, you see, the second time AA was offered to me in Connecticut, and I refused it. After getting back to Atlanta, I got a job at the Peachtree on Peachtree Hotel. The old wine cough, most of you remember that. The chef that was there, he was out of from Virginia. He didn't know me. He hadn't been around Atlanta very long. So the hotels that I had previously worked, there were some employees working at the Peachtree that had worked from those other places. About 3 days later, he says, if I had listened to what some people say, says, I'd let a good cook go. And I knew what he was talking about, but I didn't say, all I said was, A few days later was payday. And then you know what happened. I got started again. I'd been on a drunk for about 3 days, coming home this Saturday morning. My mother, Elizabeth, neither one knew where I was. I needed a shave and a haircut, and she gave me a buck, says, go and get your haircut and come back and call the sheriff. You might go back to work. Of course, I was glad to get the buck, and I was much more satisfied because I didn't want to sit there and listen to her yak. But thinking in terms between two drinks in my life, the first one that I took started me onto this road of a life failure. And I had to get to the bottom. For me, going down, there is a limit of how far I can go. And I had gone the limit as a result of the first drink 25 years prior. The last drink that I took, I like to think in terms of the best drink that I'd ever had in my life. Because instead of going to the barber shop this morning, a friend of mine was walking down the street. He said, John, where are you going? I said, I started to get a haircut. He said, let's get one. I said, right. But while we was drinking this last half pint in relation to me, I began to look at John for what he was. He had 25 years wasted, 41 years old. What do I have to show for life? There's a family, a wife and four children, and I have destroyed love and respect of them. What did it, liquor? On two prison sentences, what were responsible for it, liquor? Good job opportunities gone down the drain. What's responsible for it? I couldn't find a soul, but one thing was liquor. I was telling this fellow that I was drinking with yesterday, you know, I was acquainted, was exposed to a program in New Haven, Connecticut called Alcoholics Anonymous. I say, I see in the paper where there's a group started just around the corner from where we were drinking. And I looked at myself of what I was, and I didn't like what I saw. And worst of all, I didn't like what I felt. The physical pain was nothing to compare with the inner conviction and the inner suffering that was hurting inside. This was where the hurt was. Not from the surface, but inside. I had had enough. I couldn't run anymore. I was tired of running. So this thought that came to me as a result of this last half a pint that I was drinking, I like to think in terms of being the best decision that I ever made in my life, because I wanted out to the squirrel cage. I went off of this merry-go-round. We went up to this group where it was listed, and so happens there was one of the members there at 10 o'clock in the morning. He was just starting in his program. I saw the literature, and I said, this is it. He gave me some of it, and he gave me a big book to read. I went back home this day. My wife, saw me coming, stepping 6 feet high, a hat sitting on the back of my head. She says, he's drunk again. She'd had enough. She says, I'm ready to go. Well, you know, I was concerned, yes, about what she was thinking. But I told her, I said, you can go if you want to. I said, but I hope you don't go. I said, I went to that AA program. She said, well, I've got enough. What she was thinking, in her opinion, was secondary in my mind. I knew what I wanted. I knew where it hurt, and I wanted something different. I went on back in my mother's room. At that time, she was 80-odd years old. I said, Mom, I said, I'm going to stop drinking. I went to the AA program. I said, I'm giving it up. She said, son, I've been hearing that lie for 25 years. Her opinion didn't make any difference. The hurt that I had inside, I had made a decision coming off of a drunk. And even at that time, I can remember now, there was a feeling began to lift inside. A little freedom, because I had made a sincere decision. I began to read the big book this Saturday afternoon. I can't tell you tonight what I read then. But whatever it was, it stuck in this lame brain of mine, or this confused mind, to the extent that I wanted more of what this book was talking about. We had two meetings a week at 883 Hunter Street, Northwest in Atlanta. I went to the first meeting, I had one nickel in my pocket. The guy says, there's no dues or fees. So he says, this is free. This has began to make, it was a little confusing. How can you get something for free? But he says, all you need is the honest desire to stop drinking. But I kept going, and as I went, it got a little clearer and clearer. And the feeling inside began to get a little better. Because I think I had found something inside. You know, prior to my drinking, prior to my AA, my experience in drinking, I was always searching for something far out. Going beyond where it really was. You told me, or taught me in this program, where to search for and what to search, where to search at and where to search for. It was inside. I didn't have a job then. I needed one, yes. I didn't have an obligation. Nobody let a drunk owe him anything, and I was that kind. I didn't owe anybody anything. So I kept coming to AA. 3 weeks later, I found a job. I went back to the employment agency. He sent me back to one of the hotels, the Cap City Club in the city of Atlanta, the Athletic Club. See, I worked with all these places. I get them mixed up sometimes. But it's the Athletic Club. I had worked at this place prior. The chef that was there had worked. I had worked with him at the other place. He thought I had improved on my drinking. And so at this particular club, I was a party cook. I ran in there one night, 30 or 45 minutes late. And hadn't been there but a few days. I didn't even know where all of this sugar cane and the flour was. So we had fried chicken on my party that night. I got my pan, chicken, and salted and peppered it, and then I reached over in the bin there for some flour and wasn't aware of what I was getting until I had put some of the chicken in the frying pan and I had floured it in powdered sugar. Soon as I saw what was happening, the sugar began to dissolve. I took it out of the pan rack quick and went and washed it off, and I asked the girl in the pantry, I said, where's the flour around here? She showed me. So I went on and I prepared the pot all right, and I got several comments back from the guests that said, you know, that was the best fried chicken I'd ever tasted. But as I say, this particular sheriff, I went back over for this job that the employment agency sent me to. And this job had been filled. This was the same job that I had left prior and gone back to New York. They had replaced with the other cook, so they had a permanent man then. I came back to the personnel, the Georgia Department of Labor. And I had some good friends in there. Several, one or two of them got COVID in AA. But anyway, one of them told me, says, John, says, how about changing your type of work? I said, man, I wouldn't work. I don't make no difference what it is. He says, how about porter down to the bank? And I said, just a job is what I want. So I went and applied for a job as porter. You know, I think CNS Bank is one of the most wonderful institutions it is. And I don't think they mind me saying in relation to them hiring a drunk. Because the man in the personnel department then, in filling out this application, he says, you didn't fill out a certain section this here. And I said, I had a reason for not to. I said, I couldn't put in words what I can tell you in person. I told him that I was an alcoholic. And I told him I was trying to do something about it. He says, well, now, if you don't show up on a Monday morning, or in the morning as a result of the night before from drinking, so you don't have a job. Well, I had lost many, many jobs on that same agreement. But I appreciate him giving me a chance because I did need a job. I had no idea that day that a few years on down the line that I would be there long enough, hopefully next year, to retire. You know, this program brings about a many, many fringe benefits. So 5 years later, he was made president of the Emory Bank, and I was out servicing the safe deposit vault. Says, he told me, he says, you know, I would have given you 6 weeks, possibly 2 months, from your reference and your previous applications. He says, I knew you were a drunk. He says, but you were honest and told me what was happening. He says, I was looking for you to lie when I asked you. I bring this in for one particular reason. I had filled out many, many applications prior, and one specific with the Southern Railroad. And they had worked me for about 3 weeks after they ran a survey on the reference. And the captain met me back in on a run one morning and said, we find out from your previous record that the railroad can't work you. I had lied throughout the application. On one part of it, he says, have you ever been arrested for drunk? No, I'm no. It never was a yes. And so on many, many occasions. So what you taught me in this program, I found out right from the beginning how important it was to first get honest with yourself. This is what the first step taught me. I faced me for what I was. I was an alcoholic. I was a failure. I wanted help. You know, I needed you long, long before I wanted you. But when the reverse thought, a turn of thought, come in wanting help, it was available and you gave it to me and you showed me the way. All I had to do was to open my mind and try to listen and learn. And as a result of that, I became willing, wanting to stay sober more than I wanted to drink. And the result has been beautiful. I'm not afraid anymore. I don't have to run. Yes, my cup runneth over with joy.
not for something that I have done, but for what you have given me. This you gave to me. No questions when I got here from whence you came or what you was. You reached out and gave me a helping hand. You didn't reach down and give me a helping hand. You reached out. You made me feel alive again. It feels good where it used to hurt. My cup runneth over. That's why Jim gets back for it. He don't want to get drowned. And on, I could keep on telling you how wonderful you are. How beautiful you are. Because when I come here, you said if you get a little bit humble, you could begin to live a little. And by living a little, you could begin to give a little. Giving and living is people. And living is loving. And loving is God. Don't have to worry about him because he's right out in front of me. It's great. And as I say, it makes me feel good where it used to hate. It's quite a difference. I could go on and name many, many friends' benefits. And it would not be bragging. It would be a feeling of gratitude. Humbly grateful. You gave to me what I needed. You gave to me what I wanted. And as I say, I'm not afraid anymore. I don't have to run anymore. One of the friend's benefits, my mother at the age of 94 passed on, and she had seen me sober 12 years. I think it was the most beautiful part of her life because she was happy and she didn't have to worry about this last drunk coming in. She had several drunks in her children. And on, as I say. The music's getting louder, my voice getting weaker. But I want you to know all that I am, all that I have, all that I ever hope to be. No great thing that I've done is what you've done for me. God bless you, and I love all of you.